Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Pika!
Today is March 6th, 2016, and this is episode 104, I Wanna Be the Very Best, revisiting Kanto in 2016. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're going to be talking about the recent virtual console re-releases of the Pokemon games, and our experiences in revisiting them in 2016. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have a little bit of housekeeping. First off, we have received a few questions from listeners regarding what changes you all should be expecting, given that we are now going to be syndicated over on VogNetwork.com.
VogNetwork.com.
Well done. I had hoped you would pick that up. So the TLDR is what's changing, other than the fact that we are now going to try to keep our episodes under the two-hour mark. Basically nothing else. What Vog syndication is going to mean for most of you is that you're just going to see more content from us more reliably happening every other week.
And you know, we here on air are going to enjoy the cool, refreshing taste of Coca-Cola.
You know, new episodes now, rather than going up at some nebulous time between, you know, Monday and Wednesday after we record, you'll now more reliably see episodes on, you know, Tuesday morning after, or Tuesday afternoon after they've aired on VOG. So really all this is bringing is a little bit more structure. Of course, if you've been listening to any length of time, you still know Slag and I, we don't really do the whole, like, following the rules thing. So you're still going to hear stuff like nightly live broadcasts during E3 week. We're still going to do all of that kind of stuff. We're going to still do micros, and those may not end up on the VOG feed. So, you know, you're still going to see that stuff. But the core Game Buoy show is just going to be produced more reliably on a little bit more of a rigid schedule. But we'll still be on iTunes. We'll still be on Stitcher. We'll still be on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And you will still be able to listen to us. However you're currently listening to us, you will be able to continue listening to us. That having been said, we're super excited to be on VOG. We think it's a great opportunity, and you know, we hope to reach out to their listener base and hopefully you know, make some new friends there.
Yeah, and when our time permits, you know, from real world stuff, we will be trying to hop in chat when the episodes air, so please look for us there on VogNetwork.com.
So the other big question we got after doing our Zelda retrospective, you know, that was a hotly anticipated episode, at least as hotly anticipated as a show with three regular listeners can be.
Yeah.
we did hear your responses that, you know, you felt that there was a little bit a shortness of content in terms of our discussions, maybe a little too much brevity in the games that we did discuss. We want you to know we heard you loud and clear. We are going to do future retrospectives as two-parters so that you can still get all the content that we would have brought you before the VOG agreement. And what we're going to do specifically in the case of Zelda is for the next few weeks, after our core discussion, we are going to talk about some of our favorite Zelda games within a little more depth.
Are we going to call it something like The Legend of Zelda Spotlight Princess?
That's actually, it's in the show role as Spotlight Princess. You got it, dude. So, you know, hopefully that eases your concerns. If you have any others, please reach out to us. We definitely want to produce the best product we can for all of you out there in Internet Radio Land. We totally love you guys. We're super appreciative that you spend the time listening to us in the first place. And we're really excited to grow and have further opportunities. So thank you, as ever and always, for sticking with us in this time of transition. And in the interest of everyone's time, let's tackle some follow-ups. Slaggy, you want to get us going?
Yeah, appropriately for an episode in which we'll be discussing Pokemon, we have news from the Pokemon Company that if you access Pokemon Bank from March 4th until October 31st of this year, you will be able to receive a Regirock, Regice, and Registeel, which will each have a special hidden ability, and these will be able to be transferred over to Pokemon XY or Pokemon Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire. So, so for those who need a refresher, Pokemon Bank is the online cloud storage that allows you to, for a small fee of about $4.99 a year, American money, you can transfer over Pokemon and trade in between games of your own.
Well, and one of the big pieces of Pokemon Bank news we got recently is that the recent virtual console releases of Red, Blue, Blue and Yellow will have Pokemon Bank compatibility so that when the new generation of Pokemon eventually comes along, we will be able to transfer our Pokemon from the Virtual Console releases to that new game.
That's exciting, but you know, I bet those releases are quite a ways off.
LOL. Did you have anything else to say about Pokemon Bank or the Reggie family of Pokemon?
No, just that, I mean, it's going on now, so if you play Pokemon and you have Pokemon Bank, then you should do it. I just realized that I should go get those Reggies after we record.
Excellent. You absolutely should. We also have news here of another Bandai Namco release that is going to have English language support for the Asian release.
At least you didn't call it Bamco Nandai.
Right. This one is Gundam Breaker 3. Now, the Gundam Breaker series is super fun. It's super, like, strange and meta in that it's almost like a Musou-style action game, but the game revolves around putting together, like, virtual Gundam model kits and then taking, like, virtual versions of your Gundam models into these Musou-style scenarios. And you can, like, mix and match pieces of your various virtual models. It's really cool. I've been importing these games, and I'm super, super, super stoked for the June 2016 Asian release for PS4 and PlayStation Vita that will have English subtitles.
Yeah, that's great news to always hear those English releases. Unfortunately, in some more Pokemon news, the GDC presentation centering on Pokemon Go has been canceled, and Niantic Games, who is working with Pokemon Company on this, you know from Ingress, the CEO, John Hanke, said, "We have decided to forgo our GDC talk on Pokemon Go in order to focus on getting the product ready for beta test and launch. As much as we hate to disappoint those in the industry attending GDC, we feel our time and energy right now are best spent on making sure every aspect of the product is where we want to be." I think that's a wise decision, you know?
Yeah, I'm always a fan of delaying games if it's going to result in a better game. It sounds like that's the case here. If the game isn't ready for prime time, I'm really happy it's not being sent out to die, frankly. So, I'm bummed to read this, but also happy. And I'm also happy to read that Pokemon Go will be getting its Japanese beta field test sooner than we might think. Signups are actually going to be going on in Japan later this month. So definitely sounds like the game is getting there rapidly.
That's great. Something else to look forward to in Japan is the launch of Theaterism Final Fantasy All-Star Carnival, which is coming in fall 2016. This, of course, is the previously mentioned Theaterism arcade game. It will have over 80 songs and over 60 playable characters using a pair of buttons and joy sliders for the controls.
Something really interesting to me is that I get the feeling we will see a console release of this version of Theaterism. Previous Theaterism releases have all been on touchscreen platforms, 3DS, iPhone, Android. But now that they've come up with, like, the two joy sliders, which, let's be real, you could effectively emulate using analog sticks on, like, a PS4 controller.
Yeah.
It makes no sense not to port this.
I kind of want them to have a little joy slider controller, though.
Oh, yeah. I would totally buy a joy slider controller. I'm one of those nerds. But there's also going to be online co-op play within the arcade, so that's super cool. And some of the songs that were already existent in previous versions of Theaterism do have new note charts to take into account that there are two sliders and two buttons. So I actually saw some note charts that had, like, multiple taps at the same time, so it's like, oh, pretty sure that means you have to hit both buttons rather than just one. So that's going to add an extra layer of, you know, actual gameplay to the game. I'm really excited for it. So definitely looking forward to this release in Japan, fall 2016. Hopefully one of the local arcades will get an import, or we'll see a console release soon.
Indeed.
We also have word out of Capcom that they are going to be doing a line of re-releases of Resident Evil 4, 5, and 6 throughout the course of 2016. These are coming to Xbox One and PlayStation 4, and it will be starting in reverse order, with Resident Evil 6 coming first on March 29th for $19.99. Resident Evil 5 will come in the summer, and Resident Evil 4 will come in the fall.
Of course, that's closer to the holidays.
We also have word here that Killer Instinct Season 3 is coming. We know now for fact that it will be launching on March 29th, 2016 on Xbox One and Windows 10. It's going to launch day one with four new characters: Rash, the guest character from Battletoads, Arbiter, the guest character from Halo, and returning Killer Instinct 2 characters, Kim Woo and Tusk. Four additional characters will be rolling out as the season progresses.
That's awesome. In more Pokemon news, we...
gotta catch 'em all, Pokemon.
We had talked about previously that all this year, throughout the year, they're going to be legendary Pokemon, or I guess they're being called mythic Pokemon these days. I don't know when that change happened. But
anyway, at least for this promotion, they have been calling it the mythic Pokemon promotion.
Yeah, so the newest mythic Pokemon, or legendary, as us longtime fans refer to them.
Old people, you can say it.
Is Celebi, originally from the second generation. And this time, instead of being a GameStop code, you can just log on to your mystery gift menu through either X, Y, Omega Ruby, or Alpha Sapphire and receive a gift and get a level 100 Celebi with the natural cure ability and the moves Confusion, Heal Bell, Recover, and Safeguard.
Excellent. Just do keep in mind that since it's level 100, if you're still working on playing through these games, this Pokemon will not listen to you so until you have all 8 badges.
Oh, cheeky Celebi.
Right? We also have the first trailer for Star Ocean Integrity and Faithlessness in English. So, the game is not out yet in Japan. It releases in Japan on the PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4 March 31st.
Oh, that's so soon.
But this definitely does appear, it seems to be far enough along in English that we will definitely be seeing it in 2016. So I'm very excited about that. I can't wait for this game. And I don't think I'm going to have to wait too much longer.
Yeah. So we have some more Mario Maker costumes. They are Barbara the Bat from the Band Brothers series of games, the Tanuki suit statue costume, and the Wolf Link with Midna from Twilight Princess.
Woohoo! I'm super excited for these. I still love Mario Maker, and I think all of the various costumes are super cute, and I love what their up animation is, so super excited for these. And
the only thing I wish is that the Tanuki suit actually functioned as a Tanuki suit.
Well, it doesn't function as a Tanuki suit per se, but it still looks super cute. The tracks for these costumes, or at least for Barbara the Bat and Tanuki suit, I believe are both already up now. And the Wolf Link suit comes from the Wolf Link amiibo that comes with this week's Twilight Princess HD release. So you could go check that out now, I believe.
Awesome!
We also have word of a release window for the upcoming Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom. This is for the PlayStation 4 port, and it should be releasing by the end of the second quarter of 2016.
Oh, wow.
In time to celebrate the series' 30th anniversary this year. I'm super excited about that. I'm a big fan of the Wonder Boy Monster World style games, so I just can't wait for this. I'm super, super, super excited, and it sounds like I won't be waiting for too much longer, which has me super stoked.
Yeah, that was originally something hamster something, right?
I believe so, yeah. Flying Hamster and
Flying
the
Hamster,
something.
Yeah. And then
have a few release dates here for you. No Man's Sky is going to be releasing June 21st, 2016. Paragon, the MOBA made by Epic Games, will be entering early access on March 18th. The Bravely Second Endlair demo will be available for 3DS in North America on March 10th. It does have bonuses for completion within the full game and a storyline scenario that does not occur within the main game but is canon to the events of the main game. So there's no reason not to check it out if you're a fan of the Bravely Default series, and hopefully I'll see you there.
And if you're not a fan, you most definitely should be.
All right. And last but certainly not least, Uncharted 4. Actually, this is least. Uncharted 4 was delayed a couple of weeks and will now be releasing on May 10th. So, Saggy, unless you have anything else, it looks like we have some news.
News.
News. News. News. Oh my God. News.
Slaggy, I know this first one is one you're super excited about. Do you want to take it?
Oh, yeah. And a little minor announcement. We got a very, very small Nintendo Direct about a little-known obscure series called Pokemon. And this was to announce that this holiday we can be expecting Pokemon Sun and Moon. This is the next generation of the Pokemon games. It is coming to 3DS. Unless there is some magical, it's an NX game.
They actually literally already said Nintendo 3DS. So even even if there was mysteriously and magically an NX port, I expect we would still be also getting it on 3DS.
Yeah, so we don't know too much yet. There was a little bit of concept art, and it showed a lot of like vehicles. I think there was like a Venusaur riding in a Jeep or something. So we really don't know, but you know, a lot of people are thinking there was that episode Delta that had to do with Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire. So people are thinking like actual space stuff, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, there have been for the entire the generations that took place on the 3DS, there were have been a lot of hints toward like almost like a meta story overarching between games. Stuff like mysterious ghost NPCs that you could only talk to once and would disappear, and they would only appear for a very limited window of time during certain events within the games. Stuff like characters having like these super crazy space storylines involving world and dimension hopping and travel. So definitely interesting to see if that's going to be coalescing into what turns out to be Pokemon Sun and Moon. We will definitely be keeping you posted. We are gigantic Pokemaniacs in studio right now. So yeah, please look forward to hearing more on that. We also got
staring at me, by the way.
We also got the super exciting news that Fire Emblem Fates had the best U.S. launch in Fire Emblem series history. Quite specifically, when you combine both of the Fire Emblem Fates core game releases sales together, on its first weekend of release, it sold more than 300,000 copies of the game.
That's spectacular.
Which is absolutely spectacular. You know,
the sales are spectacular.
You know, we've been talking here on the show for a long time about how Fire Emblem was really up and coming as like one of the core Nintendo pillar series. And I think it's fair to say with Fates doing this phenomenally well in North America, that that time has come. Fire Emblem is now a core pillar of Nintendo's business.
I mean, I still can't find it in stores. I might just end up downloading it. That's how in demand it is.
Oh,
it, just,
it is so good, though.
But it's just great to see something that started out as, you know, for many of us, a left-of-center title is now on everyone's radar.
Yeah, because, it, you know, it really should be.
It most definitely should be.
We also have word from Nintendo about a new wave of Nintendo Select releases. These are going to be budget title repressings of games available for $19.99 on the 3DS, Wii, and Wii U March 11th. So for the Wii, we have Animal Crossing City Folk, Donkey Kong Country Returns, Super Mario All-Stars, and Super Mario Galaxy 2.
Awesome!
On the 3DS, we have Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D, The Legend of Zelda, The Ocarina of Time 3D, Mario Party Island Tour, and Yoshi's New Island.
Great.
We also have on the Wii U, the NES Remix Party Pack, Super Mario 3D World, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze,
Pikmin 3,
and Pikmin 3,
and Super Mario 3D World.
I thought I already said that.
Oh, did you?
I'm pretty sure I did.
It's one of the best games ever, so... I mean, especially the Wii U ones. Like, those are all so worth it.
And I don't know if I mentioned it, but they're also doing another printing of the previous Nintendo Select release of Animal Crossing City Folk for Wii. So definitely some exciting stuff coming. And if you've been looking for these games and unable to find them, now you're in luck.
Woohoo!
We also, and this is going to be our last piece of OMG news for the day.
Oh, this is a fun one.
Have this absolutely bizarre story. Yeah. That new secret menus have been found in the arcade versions of Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3. Now, you're probably thinking, oh, these are just like the dip switches, which obviously, you know, most arcade games of that vintage have. But no, this is actually like something even crazier. These are basically hidden menus that were programmed by Ed Boon, who worked and was like the big name behind the Mortal Kombat games. These are listed in-game as his like personal cheat menus, and so in addition to having all of the options that you would see in your normal dip switch menus, it also has stuff where you can like
view
every like character ending, you can view every character intro. In the Mortal Kombat 3 menu, you can like access like the weird hidden games, like the weird Galaga clone that you could unlock by doing like 50 rounds on Versus with no losses or some ridiculousness. Pong also also. So it's just, it's really crazy and wild that this just popped up now, you know, 20 years after release.
That's always so neat when a classic game has a new secret unveiled.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
That'd almost be an interesting thing to research, see if that sort of thing happens with other games and maybe do an episode about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it certainly, you know, immediately comes to mind when we had, like, the Factor 5 Rogue Squadron GameCube game where it released, like, 5 years before Episode 1 came out. Not 5 years, but a couple years before Episode 1 came out. And then when it came out, Factor 5 was like, oh, hey, guys, we actually had hidden a Naboo Starfighter in this game. Here's the code to access it.
Whoa.
Yeah, right? Which is super cool. Anyway, the reason why we're wrapping up the OMG news segment now is because there was a Nintendo Direct on Thursday, March 3rd, and we'd like to talk about it in more detail.
Oh, would we? Yes.
So, without further ado, let's get started. So, we're going to talk about this Direct. We're going to start with the North American Direct, and then we just have a couple of small news bits from the Japanese Direct that we'll cover. The first piece of news that we got is that Star Fox Zero is looking fantastic.
Oh, it looks so good.
Yeah, Star Fox Zero definitely looks like that delay did it well.
Nice level of polish now.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, it was originally expected to come out back in November. The new release date was announced for it. It is March 22nd, and it definitely looks like those 5 extra months in the oven have done the game very well, looking super good. And it's going to be bundled in its initial pressing with Star Fox Guard, which is the new version of the game previously announced as Project Guard. This is the one that it's almost like Five Nights at Freddy's meets Tower Defense. So really excited about that. Also releasing on April 22nd for Wii U, obviously. I can't wait for either of these games, and I'm super, super, super looking forward to playing them.
Me too. Mario Maker has a few new features. One of them is the, what do you call it? You know, the big spiky thing that falls from the ceiling, like specifically from Mario World. Well, basically, if you shake the swamp, it'll turn into that now. And something even cooler is key doors. So,
yes,
basically, you can have a key to open up certain doors, which will allow things such as, like, actual boss battles, which, you know, if you wanted to do a boss battle currently, you had to be just kind of creative in the way you implemented it. But now you can basically say, oh, to go through and proceed, you need to beat the boss, or you need to get hidden coins to find the key. So really cool to see how these just add so many more possibilities for the game and, you know, for the creators, really. And there's also a couple things like a super expert mode for the 100 Mario Challenge, some changes to the bookmark website. So just great to see this continue to get support. And I'm really looking forward to implementing some of these changes and additions into my levels.
Absolutely. We also have word here that the previously announced Lost Reavers will be going into open beta on the Wii U on April 14th in advance of its full release on April 28th. The game is still a free-to-play game. Its reviews in Japan have actually been fairly positive, so definitely something I'm looking forward to. We also have word here that the previously announced Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem crossover Gene Inbun Roku
Sharp FE
is releasing in North America on June 24th, 2016 as Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE.
They should have made it a hashtag for us.
But no, it's supposed to be like a music So we also got word that Azure Striker Gunvolt 2 will be releasing in North America direct to the Nintendo 3DS eShop this summer. We got a little bit of coverage on the new playable character Kopen, who was an NPC in the previous game.
Oh, yeah.
Is playable, and he'll actually have a Mega Man-style ability to use defeated boss abilities.
And so, Key Creates doing it right.
Right? Super excited for that. And in big news that had actually previously been rumored, a new Paper Mario game was announced for Wii U. This is Paper Mario Color Splash, and it is a 2016 release. It appears to be sort of a Paper Mario take on the Splatoon mechanic of, you know, ink splashes and stuff. The world is being drained of color, and Mario needs to find where all the color went. So, definitely
how much you want to bet it's Bowser Jr. with a paintbrush again?
Oh, that's almost certainly that, but if you're playing these games for the story, then you're not really doing it right. Let's see. We also have the confirmation that Mini Mario and Friends Amiibo Challenge is going to be a free-to-play download game that will be releasing for the Wii U and 3DS in the near future. We've previously discussed this game a little bit, so I don't want to go too far into it, but it is coming soon, and it does look super cute.
Metroid Prime Federation Force is going to be coming in late spring of this year, so not too far off. You know, a lot of people kind of were like, eh, about it, but they really kind of made a point in the direct to be like, you know, we really feel that, you know, this is worthy of being a Metroid Prime title, and, you know, really ties into the Metroid Prime universe, so.
Yeah, you know, it's tough because I get where the Metroid fans are coming from. We haven't had a really great Metroid game in a long time, but at the same time, I see where Nintendo's coming from. We haven't had a great selling Metroid game in a long time. They need to do something to revitalize the brand, and this is them trying their best to revitalize the brand.
Yeah, and maybe we'll see Metroid NX. Metroid Prime NX, who knows?
Well, I think that the better this game does, the better it's going to speak for Metroid moving forward. So,
fingers crossed.
Yeah, if you have no interest in the game, obviously don't buy it. But if you're on the fence, like, don't let the haters online sway you. I definitely think it would be for the better if this game does well for the longevity of Metroid as a series.
And what I thought was kind of a surprise announcement, but I guess maybe not too much. We finally are getting the Game Freak's game, Sleety Horse, coming to the West as Pocket Car Jockey. This, of course, is the game that is solitaire mixed with horse racing and breeding.
Yeah, it's basically a Derby Club owner style sim that is, like, played as, like, solitaire card games.
Yeah, I'm totally gonna make a horse named Solitariat.
Solitariat!
And yours, could be named, like, Sol Biscuit or something.
LOL. You know, obviously, it's made by Game Freak, so the art style and aesthetic is just super, super, super cute.
Yeah, and that's why I said it's maybe not super surprising, but it's just, one that I wasn't expecting to hear at this direct. Like, oh yeah, Sleety Horse.
They discussed the game mechanics and everything in the direct. I would definitely recommend you go check out the direct for at least this segment. It sounds like the game is going to be really cool and a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it when it hits the eShop May of 2016 for the Nintendo 3DS.
Oh man, I want it now.
We also have word that Monster Hunter Cross is coming overseas as Monster Hunter Generations this summer for 3DS. And there is going to be Fire Emblem costumes in the game, which is very exciting. In addition, if you have save data from Monster Hunter 4, you will get some in-game bonuses.
Cool! So,
yeah, this is super cool, very exciting, and I can't wait. We also got big news that SNES emulation is coming exclusively to the new 3DS.
Yes.
Starting on the day of the Direct, a series of games went online for purchase as virtual console games. The initial lineup on March 3rd was Pilot Wings, Super Mario World, and F-Zero. In North America, on March 24th, we'll be getting Super Mario Kart, Earthbound, and Donkey Kong Country. And on April 14th, we'll be getting A Link to the Past, Super Metroid, and Donkey Kong Country 2.
Those are all amazing games. Oh my god.
Yeah. Something that's really, really cool about this implementation of the virtual console is that, you know, I've bought a couple of these games just to see how they play, and they have a one-to-one pixel mode, which is called Perfect Pixel Mode, which actually maps out the game, the sprites and pixels mathematically to be, like, absolutely correct to the way they're generated by the Super Nintendo, which actually makes the games, I think, look super, super good.
Yeah, so, I need to get Mario World, like, right meow.
It's really interesting. You know, the Super Nintendo, a lot of third-party games were programmed in such a way as to display, like, the way you would expect on a TV. So it's actually not quite pixel-perfect to the resolution that the Super Nintendo generates graphics. But most of the Nintendo games were really meant to display at a resolution that your TV was not displaying them. So your pixels weren't perfectly square. You'd have little issues, like a common one was in Super Metroid when Samus would go into the morph ball, she'd be like an oval rather than a perfect circle.
Oh yeah.
In perfect pixel mode, she would be correctly rendering as like a perfect circle. So it's going to be really cool to see games in this mode. Obviously, if you've been messing with emulators at home, you might already be familiar with all of this, but for those of you that haven't, this is going to be a really cool opportunity for you potentially. So definitely something I'm looking forward to. We also have word here that Rhythm Heaven The Best Plus for 3DS is finally coming over to North America as Rhythm Heaven Megamix sometime in 2016. 2019.
Man, we've been waiting so long for this.
Right? And then the last surprise new game announcement in the North American Direct was for Kirby Planet Robobot. This is an all-new Kirby game for the 3DS that includes a persistent Kirby mecha that you will upgrade throughout the course of the game. There's also going to be a new four-player co-op mode, in addition to the now expected little mini-games that will have download versions on the eShop for people who don't have the full game, and a new line of Kirby Amiibo. So far, we have seen the Kirby Amiibo, the Meta Knight Amiibo, the DDD Amiibo, and the Waddle D Amiibo.
I love how Waddle D is, like, top-tier status for Kirby characters at this point.
Right.
Waddle D, y'all.
So I'm super excited about this. This is apparently another 2016 release, so Nintendo just dropping bombs everywhere. Super exciting.
UFO Kirby, just saying.
All right. Let's see. So for the Japanese Direct, what I wanted to point out was some other titles that were announced for their Super Nintendo Virtual Console on 3DS. Capcom confirmed Mega Man X, Mega Man X 2, Mega Man X 3, and Mega Man 7, as well as Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Super Street Fighter 2, and Street Fighter 2 Alpha.
Oh, wow.
Or that is Street Fighter Alpha 2, or Street Fighter Zero 2, as you might be familiar with it. They also announced Final Fight, Final Fight 2, Final Fight 3, and Super Ghouls and Ghosts.
Wow.
And strangely, Konami was also present in this announcement, bringing along Mystical
Patchy
Ninja.
Slots.
Mystical Ninja starring Goemon.
Oh, wow.
Contra 3, The Alien Wars, and Super Castlevania 4.
All right.
Right? So they're also at launch from Nintendo getting Kirby's Dream Course, Fire Emblem Mystery of the Emblems, and Fire Emblem Genealogy of the Holy War.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Nintendo's coming out swinging with regard to the Super Nintendo Virtual Console on 3DS. I've seen a lot of people online upset that the Virtual Console for 3DS is only available on the new 3DS. But, you know, as someone who's futzed with emulators, has futzed with homebrew, who really has an eye for, like, accurate emulation, like, I'm sorry, the original 3DS doesn't do it right. And that's on homebrew, so homebrew doesn't need to worry about all of Nintendo's specifications of, like, having the various functionalities of, like, going to sleep and having the home menu and supporting Miiverse and all of this, you know, all of the system OS stuff running. And even without all of that, with all that overhead taken back, the games still don't run on emulators without heavy, like, frame skipping turned on and various, like, hacks. And that has never been Nintendo's style to sell hacky emulation. It's just never
been. Why GBA titles were Ambassador.
Yeah, well, this does make me think that we may see GBA emulation on the new 3DS as well. If they can do Super Nintendo, they're not that far from GBA.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, that will probably also be new 3DS if it comes. So, I want to ask you on a personal level. You had just last week been lamenting to me that you felt a little ripped off about having bought a new 3DS. Does this make you feel any better?
No, it's not that I felt ripped off about buying a new 3DS. I felt ripped off about buying a new 3DS XL because they claimed they were never going to bring the other one over.
Now,
I mean,
they never claimed that. They just didn't say they were going to, and people assumed it meant never.
Yeah. I'm just complaining about having too many 3DSs. Hashtag first world problem.
All right. Well, then we're going to keep moving on because I don't want to linger on your first world problems.
Slidekick Mirage Sessions, hashtag first world problems.
So we also got a release date for Coldcept Revolt in Japan for the 3DS. It's going to be releasing in June. I'm really excited for this game. I will almost certainly import it, but I have to say, I really, really, really hope someone gets onto, like, licensing this for a North American release. The Coldcept games are super fun, and it is super silly to me that we are still not getting all of these games in North America. I really feel like people would respond to this game well in North America if they had access to it. So, anyway, that's about it for the Nintendo Direct coverage. Sly, what did you think of this Direct overall?
I thought there were a lot of surprises that, like, I was like, oh, wow. Like, Silly T-Horse, I wasn't expecting. Definitely, like, the Kirby games. And did you mention about Tokyo Mirage Sessions, Sharp FE, being a Japanese voice track English subtitled game?
You know, I didn't, because for our listeners, I don't think they're, like, clamoring for an English English dub.
That's true.
But I suppose, yeah, there won't be an English dub for Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE. I'm not surprised by that news personally. The game released in Japan and got fantastic reviews, but in terms of sales, it actually was a disappointment. It flopped fairly hard.
Aww.
It's hard to imagine this game would even be releasing in North America if not for the fact that it's a collaborative title and they had probably already signed contracts with Atlus to release it.
And to be fair, Atlus games and Fire Emblem games do amazing over here, so.
I don't expect that to be the case for this game. I expect this game is going to get a small print run. If you're going to try to get a physical copy, I definitely recommend that you pre-order. That's assuming a physical copy is even coming. Technically speaking, they could still go the Fatal Frame route and do digital only.
That's true.
If they do a physical release, pre-order, because I don't think it's going to be around for super long. You know, because again, while we do see Fire Emblem doing well here, and we do see the Persona games doing well here, not so much the Shin Megami Tensei games, but the Persona games certainly, if this game couldn't catch on in Japan for being too like J-pop and like fandom oriented, it's going to have an even tougher struggle here in North America. It's definitely a very niche title. I think we're lucky to be getting it at all, and I don't, for me, think that the lack of an English dub is a negative at all. It is what it is.
In fact, for me, I think it's interesting to see, you know, this is a game that maybe, like you said, would have been considered in the past too Japanese to bring over, but I think it's really interesting to see, you know, as we're transitioning into a new leadership era for Nintendo, you know, some of these business decisions being made, and I think that, you know, there's a lot riding on this first big direct, you know, so of the year. So, and I think it was a success. I think there's lots of great titles on the way, and I'm excited to pick pretty much all of them up.
Awesome. All right. Well, unfortunately, we also have a little bit of bad news. So let's move on to Doom.
This one is almost in some ways so controversial too.
Yeah, so the Japanese game release Uppers by Marvelous Entertainment has been delayed due to the fact that it was not pre-ordered very much. Basically, a lot of people did not pre-order the game. As a result, they stopped really budgeting the game. So it's kind of, from the sound of it, actually on hold.
That sucks.
The game creator Kenichiro Takaki-san had very specifically said, you know, the initial number of copies for the marketplace is based on the number of pre-orders, and the game was not pre-ordered nearly as much as they were expecting. So the game has sort of been described as a beat-em-up meets, like, underpant shot game. It sounds a little bit strange, but it has a really cool art aesthetic. Looks like it's like really like punk rock in its aesthetic. So it's a game that I would like to play, but at the same time, you know, it was previously announced for an April 21st, 2016 release, and now it's just to be announced. Doesn't sound super good. And this has been a little bit controversial that the game is basically on hold in the hopes that people pre-order so close to its release. So yeah, just kind of sucks. We also, in other news that kind of sucks, the successful, I would say very successful, kickstarted game Bear Simulator has been
abandoned.
Yeah, this game released in early access after its successful $100,000 Kickstarter campaign. The game is meant to be a fairly straightforward simulator about being a bear. The game's developer, unfortunately, John Farge, stated online, the game didn't have a great reception, it has a stigma against its name, and basically that he feels that going any further on the game is basically a lost cause, and he also mentions that he can't deal with the drama that this game has brought into his life. So, you know, one of the big YouTubers on the internet, PewDiePie, did not like the game. He did a view that absolutely bagged on it super hard. It has 2.5 million views, and he, PewDiePie, actually disliked the game so much that he tried to get a refund on it and encouraged all of his viewers who got the game to also request a refund. So a little bit of the dark side of the YouTuber fad there. And, you know, it's super sad to see any game that has been so heavily supported by fans get canned like that. So definitely sucks. But I hope that John Farge does stick with games dev. Technically, I actually thought that Bear Simulator was shaping up pretty well for being such a small, like, one-man project practically. So it just super sad all around.
Yeah, really sad.
And last, but certainly not least, we have word from Sony that they are killing the PSP's native PSN storefront application. You will no longer be able to access the PlayStation Store on any PSP unit after March 31st. You'll still be able to purchase games for the PSP, but you'll have to do so on your PC through the web-based PlayStation Store or through like your PS3 or 4, and then connect your PSP to it to download the software from there.
Yeah.
And in addition, they have also killed, and we all expected this, the PlayStation TV / Vita TV.
Well, I mean, all those $29.99 sales that we saw everywhere.
Yeah, people were cleaning house.
Those went fast. Those got snapped up.
Yeah. So, shipments of the PlayStation TV ended in America and Europe at the end of 2015. They are still shipping units that have been manufactured in Asia, but it's really just a matter of time before all of the units that have already been manufactured are going to have been shipped. So, the end, yeah. It definitely feels like the end is coming for the Vita overall, and the end is here for the Vita TV or PlayStation TV. So it sucks, but unfortunately kind of is what it is.
Yep.
That having been said, there is a cute little article here I wanted to point out to you all. You know, it's a little bit of a silly article. Usually for our Smash segment, I point out like the very best of games articles and games writing, but in this case I just wanted to point out this cute article I found over on Anime News Network.
This is an anime boo.
So this is a list of 7 highly questionable video game anime adaptations. It's cute because, you know, we talked here on the show about how while there are a handful of fantastic anime adaptations, there are a lot of really bad video game anime adaptations. So I would definitely recommend you read this, get a good chuckle. I'm not going to recommend you check any of these series out, unfortunately. Although, you know, they list Final Fantasy Unlimited. I actually kind of liked Final Fantasy Unlimited, so whatever.
You're kind of Final Fantasy trash, though.
Rude. Don't call me trash, jerk.
I meant trash in, like, you know, the fandom sense.
I don't really care what sense you meant. Don't call me trash.
Can I call you trubbish?
That might be appropriate today. So, all right. Well, let's move forward then and get into this discussion.
Well, actually, trubbish would not be appropriate today because that's one of the many, many hundreds later of the in the Pokédex. And today, we're taking a trip back to Kanto. So, we're going to have to go down the bike path on memory lane back to 1996.
All right. And, you know, I'm going to let you lead this discussion a little bit. You are our resident Pokémaniac.
Actually, I think it was determined that I am the, like, least Pokémaniac in the studio.
I am going to let you lead the conversation because you are our resident Pokémaniac.
All right, then. So, as we've talked about and been super excited for, the Virtual Console on 3DS just received releases of Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow. Or if you are in Japan, Pokemon Red, Blue, Red, Green, Blue, and Yellow. They got a blue release, right?
Beg pardon?
They got a Japanese blue release, right?
I believe so, yeah.
So, you know, we know a lot of people have been digging back in to these classic games. And for many of us, it's really been, you know, the first time in nearly 20 years that we've, like, really played the originals in their original form. You know, I know for me personally, the last time I experienced this content was with Fire Red and Leaf Green for the Game Boy Advance. And even then, you know, there was already so many system changes and stuff like that, so...
And that was the 2004 re-release, right? Not re-release, but remakes.
Right, for GBA. And, you know, just so to be able to play these in their original form is just a real treat, and just it's really, I think, really interesting to look back and see, because what I've been noticing in the way that I've seen people react over the past week is just like, oh wow, I forgot this, or I didn't realize really how much it had grown. Because, you know, when we did our Pokemon retrospective a while back, we described the series as one that, you know, is based on iteration, that there's never been, you know, maybe huge leaps forward, but I mean, you know, kind of going back to generation one, it really is, like, you know, to look at it from, you know, the recent, most recent releases of Omega Ruby off of Sapphire to these original Game Boy titles, like, that juxtaposition, I think, really kind of almost highlights that even though each individual step maybe was kind of moderate, that it really kind of spotlights just how much the series has grown. But yeah, that is not to say that, you know, it is lacking or, you know, inferior in any way.
Well, it's funny you start off with that, because I was actually going to make that point myself a little later on, but it's fine to talk about it here, certainly. I often think about Pokemon because it is so iterative in its various releases and changes and evolutions that I
was that
had
intentional?
No, it wasn't. I lose track a little bit sometimes of how different the Pokemon games that have been released as late as 2014, as recently as 2014, just how different they are from those original releases. But playing them back-to-back sort of provides such a sharp contrast for how far we've come, like
exactly.
You were saying. So it's really interesting when put side-by-side, because it does highlight that, like, while the meme is certainly, LOL, every Pokemon game's the same, nothing has changed, LOL. No, it's actually been a very jarring experience to see how much it's changed and how many of, like, the quality of life changes were so positive that, like, to no longer have them in some instances has people online like, wait, there really wasn't XP share? Wait, there aren't running shoes? Wait, there are, like, why do I have to fight so many Pokemons before I level up? And yes, I do know the plural for Pokemon is not Pokemons. I just don't care.
No, it's Pokemans.
Pokemans.
Because if we're going to take it back to 1996, 1997, 1998, we gotta say the Pokemans.
Dude, I used to go to school with someone who would call Pikachu, Pikachu.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm about to just be like, Pikachu, Pikachu, Pika-Pia. So, but yeah, no, it's been really exciting, you know, to revisit Kanto, to do the Gen 1 stuff over again, and to do it in its original released form. I myself am replaying Pokemon Yellow. Saigi, what are you replaying?
I myself am also playing Pokemon Yellow. I mean, that was my first real Pokemon experience, and I mean, I want to talk about our back-in-the-day experiences a little later, but what I'd really like to spend a little bit of time talking about. And, you know, like I said, we did have a Pokemon retrospective a while back. And what I'm really excited to do today, and, you know, hopefully if you guys dig what we're throwing down, we'd like to be able to do similar things and really kind of take a deeper look at individual games and series. So we're really excited today to, you know, be kind of capturing the moment of this Pokemania and this 20th anniversary. So What are some of the biggest changes for you that you've noticed? Or, like you said, these quality of life changes. I know you started to talk about them a little bit, but, like, for you, what about the core gameplay experience has, like, been most surprising or different for you, or that you'd forgotten about certain elements of it?
Well, one thing I'll point out, and this is actually positive for Gen 1, is that I feel like battles go hecka faster. And I think that's largely because, you know, maybe the text doesn't scroll as fast, but there are fewer things to be scrolling. None of this, like, oh, it started raining, oh, electric attacks are more effective. I just feel like typically when I run into, like, some rando poke trash in a field or whatever, that it's only like a 10 to 15 second diversion. Like, it moves really fast, whereas when I was playing XY or Alpha Sapphire, Omega Ruby, I felt like trash Pokemon would take like 30 to 40 seconds per fight, and it just overall the pacing ends up to me feeling brisker. The flip side to that, though, is that the challenge curve, the difficulty curve, is way steeper in Gen 1. I don't think I've had to grind at all in XY or Alpha Sapphire Omega Ruby, but in the Gen 1 game, Yellow, which I'm playing right now, I've had to grind before basically every gym, either because I've had no pokies that have the right ability, or because just straight up, like, oh, this gym leader is level 23, and even with some grinding, all my pokies are only level 18 and I'm getting one shot. So it's definitely been an experience sort of going back to a little bit more of a more difficult gameplay experience, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's interesting that you say that about the JRPG grind, because you know, I really, Pokemon was one of the JRPGs I got into. Like, Pokemon was really more one of the earliest JRPGs I got into. You know, I didn't get into Final Fantasy until a little bit later. So for me, like, it's really interesting to think that, like, oh yeah, yeah, there was a grind, but I mean, compared to even like a Final Fantasy game that where you would have to do like a lot of grinding, it really doesn't feel that bad. And just because grinding is something that I remember like putting a lot of time into, and it never felt like too much of a chore. It's like, oh yeah, just helping my little buddies, you know, get stronger and learn the abilities they need to get to the next spot. Like, I've always spent some time even in to like, you know, the modern day, even when not as much has been needed, you know, like, oh, this next gym is like the same levels as my Pokemon already are. So, I mean, I definitely feel that grind though. And, you know, something that you also pointed out is just like what you were saying in XY, we're like, oh, we'll take like 30 to 40 seconds just to deal with a random Pokemon encounter. And I think part of that is, you know, like with all the battle animations, like a wild Klefki appeared, and then Klefki's like, or whatever, and then it does its little animation, and then it, like, go, Turtwig, or whatever you have. So I'm like, just all of the animations, as beautiful as they are, you know, definitely.
Well, and that's exactly it. It brings the pacing down a little.
And so, I mean, I think that's something else that I also noticed, not that it was necessarily a negative thing, but just like, oh yeah, the sprites really didn't animate, but like, you know, for certain attacks, like the screen would shake or whatever. So like, that's something, not that I necessarily forgotten, there's just kind of like, oh yeah.
And I will say, you know, like, I have a really good memory for these sorts of things. I will say it seems like, and probably owing to the Pokemon seizure stuff, that some of the full screen effects have been toned down a little bit. Have you had that thought at all?
I think so, because I mean, if, you know, like the some of the effects, like for like psychic attacks, would be like, would make it kind of like blurry and stuff. And you know, I think they
stuff like Thunder Shock, which would have like a screen flashy bit, and I feel like the screen just doesn't flash the way it used to.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I think on the flip side, though, it really makes me appreciate, for a Game Boy title, what they were able to do, like, with visual effects and stuff to, you know, account for, you know, I don't want to say the lack of technology, but just for what they had available at the time.
The comparatively primitive technology.
Yes. You know, we can make the really obvious...
Observations,
thank you, that there's no day or night, or, you know, there's no Pokemon breeding, but...
Well, or internet connectivity in terms of online trades. Like
world global trade system.
Yeah, some of the stuff that we've really gotten accommodated to in the more recent releases.
But I think for me, like, these more minor differences, or like the differences in experience, are what are more interesting to me. And so, which leads me to another one. I've always been about, like, you know, stab, same type attack bonus, and, you know, choosing Pokemon.
And why don't you explain to our listeners what stab is? So
stab, same type attack bonus, is something that's been present ever since the original games. It's basically that if you have a Bulbasaur who's grass poison, then your grass and poison attacks are going to be doing double damage than they were if you were just to use like a tackle attack.
And I always thought it was an additional 50% damage. Is it double damage?
It might be 50%. You know, it's been a while since I've looked at the actual. There's like, if you're a math geek and you ever want to look at like Pokemon formulas, some of the formulas that they do to make this stuff happen is like crazy. But you're right. I think it might be like 1.5 times as much. And I think that's also a variable that maybe has varied in the different games as well. I honestly, that's something I have to go back and research. But, you know, that being said, so same type attack bonus, stab, means that, you know, you're benefiting from using attack types that match your Pokemon's types. And so, you know, I always, that's something, you know, the type matchups and having movesets that, you know, took advantage of my Pokemon's power, that's something that I really got into from the earliest stages. And so what's really been interesting to look at is how many Pokemon you catch. And, like, when you look up their movesets, or, you know, as they evolve, you're like, oh, wow. The only poison attack that this Nidoran learns is Poison Stain, and it's kind of weak sauce. Or, oh, hey, this Pokemon is, like, Butterfree, I don't think learns any bug attacks. So it's just, like, really interesting to kind of see, especially since they've really made an effort in the later generations. If you go to, like, Bulbapedia or any of the big sites, Serebii, or, you know, anywhere where you get your, like, kind of Pokemon information, you can really see that overall they've really tried to add... So that at least, you know, like, any rando Pokemon you get is going to have a couple of abilities that match their types, rather than just, like, none at all. So something that, in that way, that really influenced my experience is that as I've been playing, I originally was like, oh, you know, I really want to try and have a different team than I used to. But then I was realizing, oh, well, you know...
I was using this team for a reason.
I don't want this Pokemon because it's kind of weak sauce.
Yeah, I've been having a very similar experience. I told myself I was going to use a new team rather than relying on, you know, like Articuno, Pikachu, Charmander, Bulbasaur, Squirtle. But no, that's pretty much exactly how my game is playing out.
That's how mine is playing out too.
So, and you know, again, it's one of those things where it's like, I think it's lame a little bit just because, you know, I'm so accustomed now to being able to pick basically any Pokemon I like and make it viable, at least for the story game, not competitively, but,
right,
you know, for the single player stuff. And in this case, I feel like I have to do a little bit of min-maxing because otherwise, like, I'm not going to be able to beat these gym leaders without, like, massively grinding and over-leveling stuff.
Yeah, for example, like, I was at the point in the game where you get the Bulbasaur in yellow, and I was like, you know, I'm going to try to, before I got my Bulbasaur, I was like, you know, I'm going to try to do a Bellsprout. And then I looked up, and I mean, part of this maybe is just me being too min-maxy, like you said, but, you know, I looked up Bellsprout's learn set, and I'm like, man, there's a reason why I always went with, like, Oddish over Bellsprout back in the day. And then I was like, yeah, but even compared to Oddish, you know, Bulbasaur is way better. So, you know, like, it's really interesting because, you know, there were 151, but it's definitely, I can see where it wasn't just like, oh, these are the coolest, most powerful Pokemon. Oh, I mean, I guess they were, but, you know, there's a reason why these were our go-tos, maybe, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Some other just really random things, and this just feels like really getting on a really geeky level. Like, I forgot that you had to actually go into the menu to use the HM cut instead of just going up to a tree if you knew it and said, this tree can be cut. Do you want to use cut? So just like you said, little quality of life. I never remember having to make bag space. And, you know, I mean, I definitely remember that the bags weren't sorted into different compartments like they are these days. But I was like, I've run out of bag space like 3 times for like the bike voucher and different stuff. I was like, I didn't even really remember ever having that issue before.
That's funny. I wonder if that's because now you're more intelligent about your HM / TM use than you used to be. Like, maybe you used to use your TMs or like as soon as you'd get them.
Not really, because, I mean, you know, a quality of life change that happened way, way later on in the series is that, you know, TMs are now reusable, which is, for me, when that happened, I don't remember which generation right at this moment that was, but that was just like, what? TMs are supposed to be consumable. And now, I mean, I'm not complaining, but it's just like, that was a real game changer for me, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think, I mean, that's definitely, for some people, maybe a possibility, but no, I'm, if anything, you know, I'm like, oh, I guess I might as well just use this water gun because my Blastoise isn't going to need to use it, so I'll just use it so this Jigglypuff can be, you know, kind of cool or whatever. So I think I'm actually a little bit more liberal with my TMs, especially since some of the TMs are just kind of jank in Generation 1.
Yeah, you won't hear any argument from me there. Certainly, it's really interesting, actually, the experiences that I've had so far have just really, sort of changed, like, how I feel about the more recent Pokemon games with regard, again, to HM and TMs. Like, when they first made the change that, like, you could reuse TMs and stuff.
Or you can delete HMs now.
Or that you could delete HM moves. I was like, wow, like, how could that not have always been the case? So going back and being like, oh my god, yeah, these are one-time use. Oh man, now that I've given this Pokemon this HM, like, it's gonna have it for forever now. It's been sort of, again, like a real big quality of life issue almost.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why we called them HM slaves.
Right? Basically, get one Poke to hold all of your HMs.
Better get this one out of the box. It knows, you know, strength and flash or whatever.
Yeah. Now, have you used any HMs, though, because you wanted that ability in battle?
You know, even back in the day, I mean, Surf is like my go-to water attack. I prefer it over Hydro Pump.
Yeah, well, because, and let me recall, I believe you mentioned to me when we were talking about Pokemon off-air that you prefer slightly lower damage moves if they have higher accuracy.
Yeah. I'd always like to go for, like, a Thunderbolt Thunder, a Ice Beam over a Blizzard, Flamethrower over a Fire Blast. Also for the, you know, higher percentage of PP or Power Points, you know, so that, you know, you could use it more often in a battle. And, you know, Surf is, like, I think one of the best water moves. I always thought Fly was, you know, probably one of the best flying moves.
Well, yeah, I almost always have given Fly to my actual Flying-type Pokemon.
I've given Fly to a Charizard.
Ooh, snap! I think Fly is actually a really, I've always had really good experience experience with that ability. Like, I feel like it's a good attack.
And even though it's a TM, Dig is always something I've felt really strongly about too. Just the utility. Oh, yeah. And, you know, like, I have a Dugtrio right now, and I love that I can just, you know, if I'm in a pinch, just get back out to the latest Pokemon Center I went to and not have to worry about carrying escape ropes around. Not that I really did anyway, but, you know. So, yeah, but, you know, like, Cut, I've never really been a fan of. I think because so many of them are normal types. Like, if Cut had been, like, Leaf Cutter and been, like, a grass type attack, I might have been more open to it. But, you know, Flash, Cut, and, I mean, I guess Strength. Just, I don't really use normal types that much, so...
Oh, interesting. But again, that's probably because you're so focused on the same attack type bonuses.
Even though normal types do get stabbed from, you know, normal attacks, it's just normals just kind of...
And see, that's actually something that's always been a topic of debate among the Pokemon fandom, because a lot of the official Nintendo guides to Pokemon have explicitly stated normal type does not get stabbed. But a lot of people who have gone through the game code say that, like, no, those abilities absolutely get stab. So my experience, of course, has been that they do get stab. But again, it has to be said, according to Nintendo, officially, no, they don't.
Weird, huh?
Yeah, that's, and again, you can find a lot of conversations about that on the internet. It's pretty wild. So anyway, we should attempt to move this dialogue forward. Slaggy, what else did you want to talk about today?
So I know we kind of started to talk about this, but I want to know about your original monster memories. So, like, were there... Because I'm pretty sure that you had the same experience as me, you know, as we've talked about this, but please correct me if I'm wrong. I'm someone who owned multiple copies of Red and Blue, and then I had my copy of Yellow. I imported Green. That was the first import game I had, so I was...
Yeah, my first import was Yellow.
Your first game import ever?
Import? I don't recall. I think it was actually my first import game ever was Pokemon Yellow.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. But, yeah, so, I mean, I was one who would always have, like, you know... At least for the first couple generations, multiple copies of each type just so I could go and have different teams, which almost seemed a little silly. Like, I could have just raised different teams, but I like the experience of, you know, bringing that team up through the gyms and stuff. So I'm just curious about what were your, like, did you have go-to teams or, like, certain Pokemon you always went to? And if that is still your experience in Yellow, that you're finding that you're going back to that same Pokemon team or certain types?
Yeah, I mean, stuff like, you know, I've always caught a Pidgey early on and trained it and kept it with me for a large chunk of my adventure, and that's certainly playing out again. Same with a Butterfree. I have a Butterfree that I've raised from its, you know, first form. Caterpie. And you know, so it's definitely, I do have go-to Pokemon, and I am falling back on them this time, which is, you know, again, exactly how I was saying earlier, that I thought this time I'd mix it up a little bit. I thought I would be experimenting more, and that is, it turns out, just not my experience right now at all.
I think especially with Yellow, when they give you the other starters, it's kind of like, they're the starters for a reason. They're super good Pokemon.
Yeah, right? So having a team of three with your starter Pikachu, you add a legendary or two into that, and you have, like, a set that'll take you all the way through the Elite Four at the end of the game.
Nice. You know, it's funny, because I always catch a Pidgey, I always catch a Butterfree. My original Yellow game, I had a Pidgeot that went with me to the Pokemon League and everything, but this time I didn't really keep Pidgey around. In fact, I actually had a Spearow for a while before I needed to make room for some other characters, but Butterfree is one that I always was a good early character, but then I call them characters for some reason, like they're JRPG. Well, they are JRPG team characters, I guess. You know, but Butterfree is always one that I kind of, I guess because I didn't really learn any bug attacks, would be kind of just good for early game, but then afterwards I'd always kind of move on. Like you said, I mean, with Yellow, and we were kind of already alluding to this, you know, I definitely got Pikachu and the three starters, and something different that I'm doing this time is my usual go-to was Golem for a rock type, ground type. This time, I've got a Dugtrio. I'm really enjoying having a Dugtrio on my team. I usually... often have done a Alakazam for psychic type to round out the team, but I have a Gengar that, you know, I taught it psychic TM, and it's pretty awesome because, you know, it can't be hit by fighting types, so that makes it kind of a powerhouse. And speaking of psychic, I mean, this isn't something I've forgotten, but it's just really striking to experience that again, that psychic really was super OP in the first generation, to the point that, you know, they added the dark type in to kind of bring it down a notch, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I remember the Cries of Psychic being super OP, but I had forgotten just how bad it was until I was replaying this, and I'm just like, dude, like, why would I not use Psychic for, like, all of my slots? Yeah. And the answer to that, of course, is that, you know, I, at this point, I've invested so much time in leveling the rest of my team that I don't want to replace them with psychic types. But if not for that issue, I think I actually would be.
Yeah. Now, because we're talking about yellow, you know, that definitely skews it a little bit with having all three of the original starters available pretty early on in the game, along with your special Pikachu. And then... also, like, some Pokemon not being available, like Electabuzz, Magmar, you know, there's a pretty good mix of Pokemon in yellow, but there are certain ones that you have to get from Red or Blue. Now, I know you're not currently playing through Red or Blue, but I just really quickly would like to hear about, like, were there certain Pokemon in those cases that, you know, not having all the starters available that were kind of your go-tos, or if it was mostly the same?
You know, it was still mostly the same situation. I had a circle of friends that I would play Pokemon with, and so even
right, you had friends, unlike me.
Yeah, at this point, I had several friends that have guested on this podcast in over the years. I already knew 20 years ago when the original Pokemon games came out. So first off, shout out to my friends for being amazing, but also... so as a result, you know, I've never actually played through Pokemon without having all of the starter Pokemon. Because, you know, between our circle of friends, we would make sure anytime someone was starting a new game that we had someone that could spawn the starter, play through the first 15 minutes or whatever until you get to the town and can use the PC for trading. And we'd make sure, oh, you're starting a new game? Here, we'll get you set up with all three starters. So I've actually never really had that experience of playing through these games without the three starters.
That is such an interesting and different experience from mine, because I mean, even though it was at a certain point I did end up getting a used Game Boy Color along with my, you know, own Game Boy Color, and was able to trade with myself because that was my pathetic teen existence. You know, even then, I think it might have just been because I started out playing alone. When I had Red and Blue, I typically would not do the starter thing, and I also kind of typically had stayed away from traded Pokemon too, just because they would level so much faster and they could disobey you and stuff. So
they weren't as reliable.
They weren't, and they weren't, you know, yours that you caught. I mean, sometimes, you know, if a friend caught it, you know, that's kind of fun, but for me, it wasn't the same. So I know for me, Lapras was definitely a go-to. Great water ice type. Like I said, a grass type for me, Oddish. Really liked Jolteon when I didn't catch a Pikachu, because, like, I feel obligated to use Pikachu in yellow, but I mean, I would
and he gets super sad. Like, you lose all of your friendship points with him if you put him in the box. Like, he really hates it.
Yeah, and you can't evolve him. So I mean, even though, like, in a other situation, I'd probably use, like, a Raichu, well, not a Raichu, a Jolteon or a Zapdos, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now that we've gotten that really geeky, we've gone over those geeky things, I just kind of want to ask you about any, like, memorable parts of your journey through Kanto. Just it could be either just a part in the game, like, story-wise, or just a particular specific experience you had.
The Haunted Pokemon Tower is always one for me that I really like. I tremendously like that segment of the game.
Yeah, I just played through that the other night, and I was like, man, it was kind of crazy to think, like, these people were possessed. We had just played a D&D game where people were possessed. I was like, whoa. She was just like, oh, there was an evil spirit inside me. Oops. And that was, like, really sad with the, you know, spoiler's mom, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That was a super sad moment in the Pokemon narrative, funny enough. You know, I also obviously have super fun memories. Like, my first time through, I ended up I used my Master Ball on Articuno, so I ended up having to, like, save scum practically with Mewtwo in order to catch him, because I just had, like, 99 Ultra Balls, and I saved right in front of him and just kept throwing Ultra Balls him. And then if I caught him, but I had to, like, restart, like, three times, because, like, in trying to damage him and get him down to just a few HP and get him status affected, he would end up dying before I could catch him. So that's definitely something that I remember really strongly and kind of fondly in retrospect, but at the time I was pretty mad about
it. Oh yeah, catching a legendary with Ultra Balls is even still quite a tough go at it.
Yeah. How about you? What your Pokememories?
You know, some things that, I'm not there yet on this game, but I'm really excited to go to the Safari Zone, even though, you know, I don't really intend on using anything from there. It's just always cool to, like, try to catch a Chansey, get a bunch of Tauros, like Ash did in the anime, although that episode didn't even air here because it had a gun in it. I am a nerd. And I really, you know, you are. Even though, like, a lot of the games have kind of, you know, followed the same pattern, like, you go through the forest, you go through the mountain, you go to the big city with the mall, like, just the way that you progress through it in the Generation 1 games just feels, like, really great. And I really loved that progression, like, you know, first stepping into Viridian Forest and, you know, kind of being, you know, testing out the waters, or, you know, testing out the bugs, rather, and going to Mount Moon and trying to catch a Clefairy, and then getting the fossil with Team Rocket experience, you know, just like kind of just the progression and how each of the cities kind of had their own flavor of going battling on the SSN. I mean, I feel like I'm just hitting all the big story points here.
pretty much.
Cinnabar Island is always exciting, the Pokemon Mansion, but some of the things that have been really funny for me is just like seeing some of the dialogue, like, and just thinking about it in the like culture of, you know, 1996 through 1998. I just fought a cool trainer or junior trainer or one of those types of trainers. It said, "Have you heard of costume players?" And I was like, "Oh my god, are you serious right now?" Like, just the fact that they would, like, as a cosplayer, like, use the term costume player, like, and just that would be something that, like, you know, aside from the geekiest of us back in the day, wouldn't even have known what cosplay was, or, you know, so are you a costume player?
Yeah, that was, when you pointed that out, I got a good chuckle out of that, so.
Yeah, so, or like I said, some of the things, like, I was possessed, you know, just, because, you know, it was, like, we think of the treehouse these days, and, you know, sometimes their translations are, like, I think in a silly way controversial. Like, I don't see the problem with their translations. But, you know, back then, it was just kind of like, you know, whatever, so.
All right. Well, do you have anything else to say about that? We are at the hour 20 mark.
Oh, man, no. So, we've kind of talked about, you know, our experiences so far, but I guess, do you plan on, is this going to be it for you with Yellow, or do you anticipate you're going to pick up Red and Blue, or even maybe pick up Green on your Japanese 3DS?
I think my next step will probably be pick up Green on my Japanese 3DS. You know, it has a different sprite set that I don't think any of the released North American versions have used. So some of that I've only really seen online, and I think it would be cool to play that version of the game and see
that
art.
Yeah, it is a trip to play Green, because, you know, as we talked about on our Pokemon retrospective, those games, you know, the games we play here in the West were rebuilt from, like, the ground up because the code in original Red Green was so fragile, and some of the sprites are a little janky, but some of them are kind of cute in a janky way.
Yeah, so I'm excited to experience that because I have not played Green ever before, so I think that'll be my next step after I finish Yellow. It'll be funny if I end up importing a copy of Sun Moon just to bring my Japanese Pokies over.
Oh, I wouldn't put it past you.
And, you know, because the older games, and as far as I know, this holds true for the Virtual Console version as well, you could not trade, like, region to region, I don't believe, but you definitely can in the newer generations, so
right.
I might end up raising a stable of Japanese Pokies in Green that I end up bringing to the current generation just to trade to my North American console, tells me I'm already in way too deep.
I mean, can you do that through Pokemon Bank?
Like, well, I wouldn't trade through Pokemon Bank. I would trade to my Japanese Sun Moon and then trade from Japanese Sun Moon to English Sun Moon.
I see what you're saying.
Which is why I'm saying I'm in way too deep.
Because you'd probably have to have a Japanese bank subscription to get them into your Japanese Sun Moon, right?
That would be correct. Oh, I guess I will have to do that. And that'll be fine, too.
What's 500 yen here or there?
Right? It'll come out to like $4.38. It's not that big of a deal.
So, I mean, I feel like I already know the answer, but would you say that playing the original Pokemon 20 years later has been a positive experience for you?
Because sometimes, very much yes.
You know, sometimes, yeah, I mean, I could
tell. It has, in a very, very real way, reconnected me to the things I love about Pokemon in the first place. And it has me, I was, when the Sun Moon announcement was made, you know, these games weren't on Virtual Console yet. This was announcement for Sun Moon was made before the Virtual Console games went up, like one day before. And, I was like hype for Sun Moon, but now replaying Gen 1, I am beyond hype for Sun Moon. Like, I cannot wait. So it is definitely like reawakened the Pokemaniac within.
Yeah.
What about you? Has it been positive for you?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it's something that, you know, I think the limitations, like, you know, not having as many Pokemon to choose from has really forced me to focus on like the essence of the game rather than, oh, I can catch pretty much any Pokemon I want. If I don't find a Pokemon I want, I can go into the global trade system and get one. There are like 730 something Pokemon or whatever now. So I think really forcing me to, you know, just focus on the enjoyment of, like, you know, picking that team, raising that team, and, you know, that's something that, like, was always so special, is when, you know, you go to the Pokemon League and you see your Pokemon in the Hall of Fame and you're like, oh, I raised you from a little Charmander and now look at you. You know, I think it really, like, makes this experience really personal, and so I'm really looking forward to approaching Sun and Moon that way, and, you know, any other replays I do of other games up until that point.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, unless you have anything else to say, I think we want to start moving in the direction of getting to our Spotlight Princess.
Yeah, why don't you Spotlight Princess for us?
All right, well, this week's Spotlight Princess is on The Legend of Zelda: Link's Awakening. As I discussed in our Zelda episode a little bit, this is probably definitely a top three Zelda game for me. You know, it takes place, it actually was initially started as a port of A Link to the Past, which, you know, as we had discussed, in a lot of ways, from a gameplay perspective, it actually feels like an evolution of Link to the Past, so that's obviously why. It was developed for the Game Boy, released in 1993, as we discussed. Also had a Game Boy Color enhanced port.
Yeah.
That was Link's Awakening DX, and that was so actually pretty. Released for Game Boy Color at the end of 98. So, you know, actually, like, a fairly long time had elapsed between those. But the DX version had an additional dungeon. It wasn't really, like, a full dungeon, but it's more like a little, like, mini side dungeon that ends up giving you a new item that reduces the damage you're taking based on color, or damage you do based on color. It's, like, a whole cute, cool thing. One of the things that this actually introduced to the Zelda series was fishing, which, you know, it's funny because a lot of American gamers view fishing in Zelda as like, or in any game really, but as like a chore, whereas a lot of the Japanese gamers love fishing mini games.
Japanese gamers love fishing games.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shigesato Itoi did a fishing game, didn't he?
That is my understanding, yeah. Something that's really interesting is that Tezuka-san, Takashi Tezuka, who directed the game, Tenten, yeah, whom we've talked about a lot actually here on air, he actually was heavily influenced by the TV series Twin Peaks.
Oh, wow. And that's your wheelhouse.
Well, right? Both in terms of the game having like an air of mystery and you know, like sort of like a mind F sensibility, but also in that he
mind
wanted...
Mind F, we're an explicit tag.
But
just
also,
fucking say it.
I have actually been making an effort in my personal and professional life to curse less.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So that when I do drop curse words, they have a little bit more impact.
Sorry.
So, you know, but also in that the small town feel where it's like, okay, this is a small town and things are not necessarily sinister. They're just a little weird.
Things are not as they seem.
And that, you know, is absolutely Twin Peaks, and also, I would say, effectively done in Link's Awakening, where, you know, again, you interact very much with sort of these small town village type characters who are all kind of eccentric and have their own little weird stories going on.
Oh, yeah.
I would also say that Majora's Mask falls into that sort of design style, so...
I mean, but with Link's Awakening, you know, like, with the Chain Chomps period, it's like, you're not from a Zelda game. What are you doing here?
Yeah, well, it definitely does create a little bit of, like, an off-center style feel to the game. Like, things just feel very strange. Like, this does not feel like a normal Zelda game. But I actually think that enhances the game. It makes it feel like it's doing more unique and interesting things.
Oh,
in
yeah.
My opinion.
I mean, Link's Awakening really has its own special little flavor and a little odd sense of humor. I mean, that's what I think is so special about it.
Absolutely. You know, it also has cameo appearances by other other Nintendo characters. Wart appears in it. Yoshi appears in it. Kirby appears in it. Dr. Wright from the Nintendo published version of SimCity that was on Super Nintendo appears. He also made a cameo in Smash Brawl as one of the assist trophies, I think. But one of the characters from the Frog for Whom the Bell Tolls pops up.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's, you know, this is, it's a definitely a very strange game. Several characters in the story break the fourth wall. It's just, I mean, really, in a lot of ways, Link's Awakening could be described as, you know, Zelda Twin Peaks. And that, for me, is exactly right. Gameplay's super tight. I think it has some of the best dungeon design and puzzle design in all of the 2D iterations of the franchise. And dungeon design, for me, is one of the biggest things about a Zelda game that can really hook me, which I'll actually be discussing again toward the end of the episode, because I've been playing a Zelda game this week that has really wowed me with its dungeon design.
Yeah.
So, Sagi, what about you? What do you think of Link's Awakening?
Oh, it's just, it's a special little game, and really, like, you know, from, like, what you said, just everything that, all of the differences that maybe some people would be a little off-put by, I think are what makes it special. And, you know, in a franchise where we, you know, even as saying, you know, even though these games are all great compared to other games, sometimes the Zelda games could be a little stale or repetitive, like, you know, or, you know, not really doing enough to push the series forward. This was an example of where the series was pushed forward in a great way. Also, a little fun fact, it is one of the favorite games of the queer indie artist Owen Pallett, who used to record under the name Final Fantasy. His song He Poos Clouds, which is about Link, makes a reference to finding secret seashells. So
that's awesome. And yeah, you know, the secret seashells, like, that's another thing where I think this was the first game in the series to do, like, what we ended up seeing also with, like, the Sculptulas in Ocarina of Time, where you have sort of a specific collectible that you're collecting throughout your adventure, trading in for upgrades and special power-ups.
Wait, they're called Sculptulas? Because I always call them Sculptulas.
I always thought they were Sculptulas, like tarantulas.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I just feel really stupid now.
Oh.
Sculptulas.
So, yeah, I, you know, obviously talked about in our main Zelda episode, I think the story is fantastic. I actually think that there's a strong narrative to Link's Awakening. I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't played it.
Oh,
it is available on the 3DS Virtual Console, and I would call this an absolute must-play of the Zelda franchise.
Masterpiece, gem, classic.
Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say about Link's Awakening, then, before we wrap up our discussion for this episode?
No, just that, you know, it's still fairly easy to get, you know, Virtual Console, right?
Yeah. So, and just a couple of bucks. It's like $4, $5 or something.
And I mean,
so,
just really just a joy. I mean, just, especially if it's something you can just set aside like a weekend to play through. I mean, you're just on a, especially, I don't know, like, I always associate it with, like, I'm playing through it on a rainy weekend and just, you know.
Well, this weekend in particular in the Bay Area would have been perfect for it.
Right.
All right. Well, then with all that having been said, let's, did you have any fan feedback for our main episode? Bring up those social links.
Our social links question of the week this week was, this week, revisit Kanto with us as we dive into the Virtual Console releases of Pokemon RGBY. Has time changed the experience for you? Over on Twitter, our first tweet comes from ActDeft, saying, well, the first gen of games is definitely slower paced than the new ones, but I still like playing them. I definitely feel that. I've put in like 13 hours so far, and like on the fourth gym, just beat it.
Well, and it's so funny because, like, I've heard some people say that they feel it's slower paced. I feel like, you know, maybe like overall it is a slower pace, because I definitely am like 8 or 9 hours in, and I'm not as far as I normally would be 8 or 9 hours in on a newer gen Pokemon game. But then at the same time, like on the minute to minute level, like the way battles go faster, in my opinion, it feels like I'm getting more done. So
yeah.
It's interesting the way that pacing works and how we all sort of have our different takes on it.
Yeah, I feel it's a really even paced game compared to, like, I think X and Y, where I felt like, wow, it took a long time to get from gyms 2 to 3 or whatever, but then 3, 4, 5, 6 happened really fast, you know? Atari Barbie, also known as Ian from the Koopa Club podcast, said, in regards to, has time changed the experience for you? He said, nope, kind of wish the later games had this sort of difficulty to them. Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, for me, I'm not experiencing, like, a too hard, Nintendo hard sort of thing, but, you know, it definitely, I'm hearing a lot of people saying, oh, wow, you know, going back, it is tougher.
Well, and that actually, I agree with Ian on that. I think that it is a little harder, definitely. You know, I think I even said that, but I definitely view that as a good thing. Like, I am having to work a little harder. Things don't feel nearly as face-rolly as the newer gen sometimes can feel. And, you know, I think that's actually a good thing. It definitely has me more invested in the moment-to-moment choices I'm making in my trainer fights, especially. Like, when I'm going for a badge, like, I'm actually having to, like, go out to win.
Yeah. Gamer Fox saying, time has perhaps changed my perception of first gen, but playing it again is just as enjoyable as the first time to me. Aw. That retro code said, similarly in terms of, has time changed experience for you? That retro code says, nope. The classic gameplay and grinding drew me in again and just reminded me of how great the Game Boy was back in the past. Yeah, you know, like, something I didn't mention is that Sulker helped me, aka Monarch Pyratica, had helped me evolve my Haunter into a Gengar. And I was just thinking, like, man, you know, the Link Cable, like, that was such an innovative thing, and, like, just how cool was that, you know, and how groundbreaking was that back in 20 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. It created, like, a whole subgenre of games and introduced a, you know, ton of game concepts that are fairly widely spread now. So, you know, the whole, like, raising monsters and having items and trading them, like, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, and speaking of Sulker, Xander T, who is Sulker over on Facebook, said it's been an interesting revisit of the Kanto region. The nostalgia factor is hitting hardcore, which makes it more of a triumphant return than a new experience. That being said, it's wacky how vastly different the gameplay is in, say, X and Y compared to this.
All in all, I'm super happy this happened.
Yes. And Crystal Diaz linked a Beavis and Butthead fire, 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 fire. So I'm guessing you like fire types. We'd also be curious if you were someone who didn't get a chance to answer our question of the week yet. If you would prefer moving forward Fire Red and Leaf Green style remakes or just like a pure virtual console port now that this is something that we're seeing.
Yeah, you know, a lot of us thought we would never get virtual console releases of these games.
It just didn't seem like it would work, you know?
But, you know, they've done it. They've did the work to make it happen, and, you know, do we prefer this or do we prefer full-on remakes?
Exactly. So, like, what my example is, like, 10 years down the line, would you want to see Diamond Pearl on Virtual Console, or would you like to see Shiny Diamond and Sparkling Pearl for the Nintendo 3DS 2 NX, whatever is out at that time?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to know what all of your answers are to that. So, well, that's about it for our discussion. Let's move on to what we've been playing.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Slaggy, what have you been playing this week?
Mostly Pokemon Yellow. Like, I had intended to play a lot more than that, but Pokemon happened, and that was sort of it. I mean, like, once that, I said I've already put in 13 or something hours, and that was with really late days at work and stuff, so, you know, I'd pretty much get home, put in 2 or 3 hours before bed, and then got a bit of time in this weekend. So, yeah, that's pretty much been sucking up my life, just like it did 20 years ago.
Awesome! Let's see. So, I have also been playing Pokemon Yellow. Already talked about it here. The other two games I've been playing, Fire Emblem Fates, which I'm having a fantastic time with. I'm playing Birthright first. Again, you know, we discussed that last episode, that I'm playing Birthright not because, LOL, I want that easy difficulty, but rather because of the storyline. I felt like that was the group I had to side with.
I'm so surprised at you choosing story over gameplay.
Well, and the thing is, I am so invested in this game's story and dialogue. Like, I'm pairing units up because, you know, there's like the whole dating sim, not quite dating sim, but almost dating sim aspect. And I'm like uniting couples and getting them married based on personalities rather than like who will bear the optimal children statistically, which is not my normal style of play at all. But this game's writing has definitely got me hooked into like, oh, this person and this person have a super cute story. I want them to get married. I ship it. Exactly. I'm shipping characters in this game. So definitely has its hooks in me. I'm really enjoying it. Still playing it pretty much every day. And then making time for Pokemon in between. The other game I've started playing, it just released like 2 days ago and I'm already like 6 hours in, is The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess HD. And this is a game that, you know, I often find myself defending because I think the game is unfairly hated. So I knew or felt going into playing the HD version that, like, you know, either I'm going to love it still and think it's still underappreciated, or I'm finally going to see what everyone is so upset about it. And I can safely say, no, I still love it. I think the dungeon designs are fantastic. I think the new weapons and the way that they work are really cool. I'm just totally here for it. And it's, I think it's a beautiful HD upscaling. I think that the visuals look fantastic. The Wolf Link amiibo is super, super nice.
Yeah.
I'm completely here for Twilight Princess HD. I did not think that was a statement I was going to be making, but I'm glad it is.
It's like the definitive release, it looks like.
I would say so. I think that's it for what's up. So, Slaggy, do we have any non-discussion related social links?
Yeah, we do have a few tweets to catch up on. Your Enzyme had asked, am I going to have to go somewhere new to get my Game Buoy fix, or will it still pop up on my iTunes feed? Hopefully we addressed that in the beginning of the show. We still
to address it directly. All of our feeds that are already up will continue to be up and continue to get updated. You do not have to go to VOG. That's just where our new episodes will premiere, and then they'll be uploaded to all of our feeds within an hour or two of that airing.
Yep. That said, I know in the past we have had some snafus with iTunes. So, you know, just of course, if you notice anything awry with the feed, please let us know. I always try to be on top of the techie side of things. So just always let us know if you're ever having any problems accessing.
Yep. Absolutely. Is that it for us?
No, we have a little bit of feedback on the Zelda episode. We had Brondorf give us a retweet saying, looking forward to the Zelda convo. Looking forward to the Zelda convo.
Well, thank you. I hope you enjoyed it.
Your Enzyme had said that time limit's tough, eh? Seems so rushed, and I bet that's edited a good bit. It'll take some adjusting. So, yeah, I mean, we hope that, you know, our Spotlight Princess has kind of, you know, whet your appetite a little more for what we didn't give you on the Zelda episode.
And there will be at least one more Spotlight Princess. But, you know, if people are digging it, let us know. And, you know, there's no reason we can't do additional Spotlight Princesses until we've talked about all the Zelda games we have strong feelings about.
Yeah, just not Spirit Tracks. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No, but honestly, we're never doing a Spotlight Princess on Spirit Tracks. I'm sorry. That's not going to happen.
Crystal YD is saying, two gay men talking about Playboy. I've heard everything now. Yes, you were talking about the article, but still, winky face.
LOL.
To
totally
be fair, they're
fair.
Not about nudes anymore.
Yeah, no, they really are more focused on the articles now.
Imagine that. Playboy in 2016. Braun Dwarf following up after listening, saying, digging the Zelda episode of GameBuoy.org. Lots of unconventional opinions on the series. Many I agree with.
Oh, fantastic. I'd be interested in hearing more about that.
You had made a tweet on your own Twitter about the Direct, and that retro code had said, GameBuoy.org is on the job. Aw.
Well, I do what I can.
And that's about it for our Twitter tweets.
All right. Well, then let's wrap this show up.
I should catch a bird-type Pokemon and name him Twitter.
I'm sure someone has before. Slaggy, you want to start those solicitations?
Yes. We appreciate your listenership. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We appreciate your subscriptions and streams over on Stitcher Radio. We especially love all you out there listening to us on the Voice of Geeks Network.
We especially love all of you.
No, I know, but if you're listening on VOG right now, hi. And maybe we are in chat right now. Who knows? I cannot predict the future. But we also love your Facebook likes, or, you know, now they have like heart and wow and OMG and stuff. So
are they dog?
Basically, yeah. So maybe give us a Facebook.
Such like, very wow.
Facebook heart or a Facebook wow or a Facebook, hopefully not a Facebook mad or a Facebook sad.
We also effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter. You know, Twitter is maybe not perfect, but we really love it. And so tweet at us at any time. You can also mail us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And our complete 104, is it now?
104 as of 104 today.
104 episode archive is available at gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
So, you know, especially for those of you on VOG who are maybe new to us, if you want to hear our past episodes, go over to GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. Yeah, if you dig what we do, you know, we've been doing this. We have 104 episodes up, and we've tried really hard over the years to make our content a little bit evergreen. Obviously, the news is going to go stale, but hopefully some of those conversations and discussions, you know, might still have some interesting stuff to hear, I hope.
Yeah, and we're coming up on almost five, and entering our fifth year in a few weeks. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we'll have to do something for that. Wink.
Wink, wink. A wink to the past.
So other shows that y'all should be checking out. I'm going to get into our shoutouts because we're coming up on that time limit.
Oh boy.
You should check out everyone over at the VOG Network at vognetwork.com. Specifically, I'd recommend you check out Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I personally steal ever so many of my cues. And the Ranger Pridecast. That's a show that I appear on with Shane Alenko. We take a look at the current running series of the Power Rangers TV show and the Super Sentai series upon which they're based. In non-VOG shows, you should check out Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, and their sister show X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You should also check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast,
which is a
Star Trek
show.
Podcast you hope doesn't fail, and which does happen to be on VOG. I'm going to have to reorganize my shoutouts a little. And Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. And last and definitely least, Slagkick's show, Reading is Fundamental, where we dish tea and sip shade on the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race, which is making its triumphant return, show Drag Race tomorrow, and our podcast about it on Thursday night. So please look forward to that.
We have
very excited about
up,
it.
So go listen now.
And Slaggy, why don't you take us to a game bar or other Hunty Bunch place?
Yeah, well, the Hunty Bunch is our name for those podcasts about gaming that really, you know, were there to support us ever since our humble beginnings. And one of those longest running ones has been Game Bar, which is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion. We love those folks over there, and we love what they do. I also would like to shout out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. Delvin from VG Realness is one of our co-librarians on Reading is Fundamental. And I usually shout out a certain podcast next, but I want to save them for last today. So I'm going to move on to La Palanca Podcast, podcast por y para gay gamers latino-americanos en español. I'd also like to shout out to the Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ QT gamers who love games and love talking about them. And though I don't believe actually queer, very much queer allies, Nintendo Fun Club, which is your place for platforms, positivity, and pop punk. And last but certainly not least, I wanted to do this a little out of order today because I wanted to give a very special and heartfelt, bittersweet shout out to Koopa Club, which was an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. The award was from their mothers, and I'm using the past tense because very sadly, but you know, understandably, these things happen, and you know, priorities change whatsoever.
So yeah, they recorded their last episode
today. You know, at this point when you're listening to us, hopefully that will have gone up and you know you can kind of celebrate their I think they were about 4 or 5 years or so. So you know,
yeah, and you know, I want to say, and you know, I go out of my way not to talk too much about Koopa Club for reasons that people have asked, but I have no interest in contributing to gossip or whatever. I am a huge fan of Koopa Club. I can say unequivocally without question that GameBuoy.org would not be where we are today if not for the fact that we were such good friends with Koopa Club. I absolutely respect them. I love what they do. And I'm absolutely gutted that they've ended their voyage. But they definitely have left behind a body of work that anyone could and should be proud of.
Indeed.
And I really, truly hope that all of those voices come back to internet radio airwaves sooner rather than later.
You took the words right out of my mouth. So we salute you, Koopa Club, and again, yes, thank you for, for me especially, Koopa Club, really just listening to them and how they just had so much fun on air really influenced how I presented myself on air. If you go back and listen to some of these early Game Buoy episodes, I was just kind of like, hello, I'm First Mate Slagkick. So I think, you know, definitely all of our Hunty Bunch has been really formative for me, but, you know, Koopa Club really showed me how a gaming podcast could have, like, lots of fun and be sassy, silly, and celebrate.
Also be intellectual and bring, you know, real data and deep game discussion to the table.
Right, which I think is true for all of our Hunty Bunch. So.
Absolutely.
Kudos to you. I'd also like to make one more shout out, and that is to Anime Buoy, which is your port of call for your anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. If that sounds kind of familiar to you, it's because it is our show. It is our sister show, which which you can go visit at animebuoy.org.
Animebuoy.org. All right. You want to shout out Zelda Reorchestrated?
Yes. Our beautiful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated. And so we're really thankful to them for providing us with a beautiful theme song. I mean, they didn't provide it like just for us. But
they made it and let us use it. So
yes.
All right. We are forever pouring out of 40 there. And we need to cut this short right now. So thank you all of you out there in Internet Radio Land for listening. We are so, so, so appreciative that you spend your time with us. We know that you have a lot of choices out there on what to listen to. We hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. We'll be back at you in 2 weeks' time. But until then, keep catching, keep fighting, and Pokemon!
I did my best. I have no regrets.
Tezuka-san, Yoshiaki.
Oh, yes. So we do have social links this week. We asked, this week we revisit Kanto with our social links question of the week was, this week we revisit Kanto. Yeah, we do have a few tweets to catch up on. So we have one from Beatrice B over on Twitter. Irvin Dennett is the Twitter handle, saying, hi, GameBuoy.org. Try to ATT bin my punctuation trolley176relaxinggame.info/2549286. Just try because you are not gonna push pin emoji make it.
Did you just read a spam comment?
That's spam.